Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Moors, to Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay, and tonight we have a very, very extraordinary program for you. We're going to deal with Moors in the Urban Jungle, Part 1. What should Moors do when they are attacked? What should Moors be most concerned with today? How should Moors respond to attacks by police? What should Moors do involving weapons? What should Moors do when their children are attacked and beaten by prison officials? What type of weapons should Moors have? What type of training should Moors have for the use of these weapons? These many questions and more we're going to deal with this evening. So I need you all to hold tight, and we'll get back with you just in a second. But first of all, I want to say, as usual, for those who are new, we are offering our free articles, The 14th Amendment Exposed, The Commerce Game and How to Play, and Secrets of America. And the way you access that is simply by contacting me at tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that right to you. Okay, now as far as my archives, everybody know before you try to do anything, you got to have some power. You can't do nothing without no power. So I need you to contact me, or go on the internet, and type in tahakaarchives.org. And after you get in there, call me so that we can go to work. If you got a problem with your mortgage company, if you got a problem with debt collectors calling you, if you got a problem with the student loan, if you got a problem with your people in jail, your children, your relatives, I just need to call you. It don't matter what it is. Just give me a shout, and I guarantee you that I will take you right to it and let you examine it. Then we will get together, and you can examine it, and then you tell me what you think. If you got children dealing with school projects in school, inside the United States, trying to deal with the school projects or whatever, all that information is there. If it's a word that you need to know how to look up that you understand, we got the most powerful dictionaries on the planet right there. Okay? So what I need you to do is contact me in regards to Tucker's Archives after you get them at area code 904-303-9061, and then we are ready to go to work. That's all you got to do.
Okay, just what is Tahaka's Archives? Tahaka Archives is a collection of some of the most beneficial information in the country, And the way we do this is we put this in your possession and we walk you through getting the job done. Whatever it is that you're dealing with, if you're dealing with your kids in education, if you're dealing with mortgage companies, if you're dealing with bankers, if you're dealing with your light and water company, credit card companies, regardless of what it is, that is the way this thing is designed, because everybody in this country, especially people of African descent, need a power base inside your home. So to access Tahaka's Archives, you simply go to www.tahakaarchives.org and contact me after you get through with that. Area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and we get you in there. That's tahakaarchives.org. Okay? That's what it's all about. Thank you.
Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let us deal with the situation at hand. A lot of us are trying to figure out how do you survive in an urban setting, in an urban jungle. Number one, the first thing that we have to understand, we have to understand this. If we don't understand this equation, we cannot begin to take care of ourselves. We have to understand this. Number one, people of African descent are under attack worldwide. When you hear the word minority, you must understand that it does not apply to you. The people that are saying it, it automatically applies to them. But in order for them to survive, they have to lead you to believe that you are a minority. Minority means the smaller number. That's simply not true. People of color blanket the earth worldwide. If we can clearly understand this and get this in our mind, then it is at that point that we are now officially ready at that point to go to work. A lot of us live in areas that are called ghettos. We have situations that's going on inside these communities. Our loved ones are being policed. They're being shot down in the street. It's as if there is no type of remedy in sight. But I have to stop you and get you to understand that, yes, it is. If I have a brother in California, his name is John. We'll use that. For an instance. Now, John got a son. Okay. But that's all John got. John is living within the confines of a neighborhood that police shootings and murders of young men of African descent are going on a regular basis. But what if John is approached by Willie out of New York City, or Alabama, or Mississippi, or Detroit, and Willie say, John, how many sons you got? I ain't got but one. Would it be okay with you if me and my brothers adopt your son, and if there's ever a problem, we can come see about our son? I got 50 brothers. Would that be all right with you? And John say, yeah. Now, Willie is under obligation at this point. Whenever there's a problem and John call him, John got to come to town with 50 men. The only thing Willie need to know is who done it. That's all. Now we're ready to go on to the next thing, because you know what to do. What we have to do is understand that we have to ensure our own survival. We cannot depend on anybody else for that. We have to do that. The men are going to have to stand up in America and take responsibility, because we're under attack like you've never seen before. there is a gigantic media blackout when it comes to the killing of our children, our daughters, the rape of our daughters, the disrespect for the men, the husbands, the whole ball of wax is going on. This paradigm must be dealt with, and this is why I'm having this broadcast this evening, so that we can deal with the raw, butt-naked facts tonight on this particular issue. The murder of our people have to stop. There have to be remedies in place. So tonight, I'm going to talk to you about how to go hunting, how to go fishing. You hear me? We want to talk to you about how to go hunting and how to go fishing. What type of weapons do you need to use when you go hunting? What animals are you going to hunt based on the weapons that you are going to use? It all means one thing. That one thing comes under the heading of one word. It's called survival. If you don't do nothing, nothing will happen. So the first thing we're going to deal with is, what do I need when I hunt deer? The best weapon to use is a high-powered rifle. The best time to hunt deer is at night. And if you're going to hunt deer at night, you don't want to disturb nature. If you're out in the woods or if you're in this urban jungle, you don't want to create a disturbance. You want everything to happen nice and quiet. So I have included a website in my advertisement, and all you got to do is go there and look at the equipment that is available for you to use and mount on your weapons when you get ready to deal with this situation. You want to make sure that when you fire these weapons, there's absolutely silence. You don't want to disturb nobody. You want to make sure that whatever you're shooting at, one shot and one kill, very quietly. Now, the reason why we want to do that is because we want to make sure that we're able to do what we have to do and go where our prey is to remove the prey. Now, I have a caller real early in the broadcast. I'm going to open up the line. Area code 904, could you tell us who you are, where you're calling from? What's your question or comment?
Sharon Hunter Bay, Jacksonville, Florida.
Hey, how you doing, Sharon? What you say your last name is, a Hunter?
Hunter Bay.
Oh, okay. All right. Hunter Bay. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what's your reason for calling?
Well, I was just calling in to listen to the show and to see what was going on. I like the topic of conversation going on tonight about the different how we're always taught that we're a minority when we are not a minority. But the reason why that's so believable to so many people is because most people watch TV, which is the biggest way to control everything. Now, if you can have cable TV, you might have 100, 200, 300 channels. And if you sit there at any given time and just flip the channel, you're going to see somebody of European descent, Caucasian, on the screen. So this, they do this every day, all day, and you're looking at TV every day, then you're going to think that they rule everything and that they're the majority of people because you see that over and over. So they got to be in the majority which makes you a minority. But that's not the way it is.
Okay. Now, you're saying that, excuse me, you're saying that on television, it's been so long since I really sit down and watch it, that the majority of what we see on it has a particular species of person there for us to see over and over and over, and our brain is making a series of photographs of this, and it's getting down into our nature and affecting our behavior. Is that what you're saying to me?
Exactly. That's exactly what they're doing. They're flooding the brain with and the mind, taking pictures of nothing but Caucasians and leading you to think that it's a bunch of them. So they've got to be the majority. But they control the media. They control everything that goes on that TV and when you can see it and when you can't. Like, for instance, this month is the month of February, because it's Black History Month. And so now is the time when they'll put a few little black movies and things of that on and stuff like that, and do little history things on Martin Luther King and all the civil rights leaders and stuff at that time. So they're going to give you a break for the month of February and show you a little diversity on the TV.
Okay, well, now wait a minute now. In your opinion, if that's what they're showing us, in your opinion, what do you think they should be showing us?
Since they're the ones that are in charge of showing it and they want to lift themselves up, then they, I guess they're doing, they're showing exactly what they need to be showing for them, but it's not for us.
Okay, but wait a minute now, because these particular people that you're talking about says that a lot of them are conservative. They need to conserve the status quo, and everything is all right. There's nothing to be concerned about. We shouldn't be alarmed. Demo jobs. Everything is all right. But now, based on what you're telling me and what I'm seeing through, is that you're telling me that there's something else behind the scenes that's possibly more sinister. Is that what you're saying to me?
That's about it. It's a conspiracy. Yeah, I think it's something more cynical than that. Because the only way that you can control another person, and the best way to control them, which is how they've controlled us for all the years that they have, is through the mind. And that,
now, wait a minute. Now, hold on. Now, you sound kind of low. Is there any way that we can get your voice to come across loud and clear? Because I got some questions for you.
Okay. Is that better?
It had to be a little louder. Can we get a little louder?
Wait a minute. Okay. How about that?
That sounds much, much better. Let us have it.
Okay. What? You got another question, or you want me to repeat what I said?
But no. You're all right. We got that down. But first of all, how were you raised? Tell me about your background.
Well, I was raised in Mobile, Alabama,
okay.
569 Kent Street, and by my grandparents, Genevieve and Charlie. Well, his name was James Clarence, but he was known to everyone as Charlie Wise, and they raised me and my three sisters, because my mom had left us at that point in time, and we didn't have nowhere else to go. So they took us in and raised us there.
All right. And, well, tell me about Charlie Wise.
I think he got that name because he was a number shark and a card shark. And
okay.
He could just add numbers not today. They got this new math out where kids can learn how to shortcuts to add math. But he was doing this way back in the day. His shortcuts, he can you can give him a string of any numbers, and he can tell you the total of them. He was good with that. So that's how he got the name Charlie Wise. He wasn't no taller than me, about 5'4", little stocky dude. Yeah, he wasn't tall. He was about 5'4", no more than 5'5".
What time frame are we talking about involving Charlie Wise?
Well, when I came into the picture, I would say it would probably be right about the early 70s.
Okay. But
yeah.
What was Charlie Wise like before you came in the picture? Did you know anything about that?
I knew that they were my grandparents, but I lived with my mom at that point in time, so we would just, you know, get on with him during the holidays or something like that, but it all changed when we had to live with them, because they were very strict.
You're very strict. All right. Well, okay, well, now you got to tell me about the story of Charlie Wise. What kind of man was Charlie Wise?
Charlie Wise was, as they say in today's term, was a beast, I'm telling you, because he was about 5'4", as I said, 5'5". He had his own business, always had his own business. He was a nightclub owner. He had nightclub. And he carried a .38 on his hip. I don't know where he could just walk around. I don't know. I guess he had the license to do it because he was a business owner or whatever, but he would always have his .38 there on his hip. He ain't never get into no disturbances at his club because everybody knew not to mess with Charlie Wise. They knew he was shooter. So they didn't even mess with him. We have no type of call of popo down there to come and see no kind of disturbances at Charlie Wise club. The Silver Spoon.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, how would... Okay, now, wait a minute now. You tell me you got a 5'4" man...
Mm-hmm.
...that carried a .38 on his hip.
Yep.
That run a nightclub.
Yep.
All right, now, how many sisters do you have?
I have a total of 4 sisters and 5 of us total, 5 girls, but 4 of us.
Okay, so all 5 of y'all live under the administration and rule of Charlie Wise.
That is correct, because that's exactly what it was. She was my grandmother. She had her own cafe business for a while, but then after a little while, then she let that go, so she was mostly at home. And we ate 3 meals a day. And when Charlie Wise hit the corner coming home from work, we live down the street, and he'll blow the horn at the corner, just start blowing the horn. And all that meant was we were supposed to get our bus up and get out there and open that gate so he could drive.
Wait a minute. Wait. What kind of car was Charlie Wise driving?
A Cadillac.
What color was it?
It was pink.
Charlie Wise, 5'5", with a .38 on his hip. You say Charlie Wise lived during the 60s going into the 70s. You in Alabama. So that means that we had the Ku Klux Klan in the area. When did the Ku Klux Klan stop this man?
I can't never remember nobody stopping him. Not no family. I don't even remember him even being in no conflict with the law. They just wouldn't, nobody just didn't ever bother him. I don't know why, but he was a beast.
All right. Let's go at it from another angle. Charlie Wise had 4 daughters, 4 granddaughters living in his house. Were you girls working at the club? Or who were working at the club?
Oh, yes. See, that was big in our house. We were raised back in the old school. We went to school, And when we come home from school, we have to change out of our school clothes and get into our work clothes. Because then we had to clean up the house. First we had to do our homework. Then we had to clean up the house. Whatever we had our normal duties to do every day, each person had a different chore they had to do. And so that was that. And then on the weekends, on Saturdays, that's when we have to go down there and clean the club up, add that to our list of duties to do. And we would have to do everything. We would have to mow the lawn. I remember he had this big seal in the back of the club, and the grass was taller than us. And we had not even a regular lawnmower. You remember those old lawnmowers with just a, it wasn't no motor to it. You just push it.
Oh, okay, a blade cutter.
Yeah, that's what we had to mow, get that grass cut. It took us.
Did y'all get it cut?
We damn sure did. We had no choice but to
don't,
get it cut.
Don't cuss.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I? Mm-hmm. We
okay.
had no choice but to do it.
All right. Now, how many of y'all were working in the club?
Everybody, when you came of age, had to work in the club. I was the oldest, so I got the first experience of that. I think
all
I
right,
had to be about 12, 13, somewhere up in there. I had to go in there and work the club. When you have cabarets and stuff like that, we have to go.
Did any of the men in the club try to talk to y'all?
No. They knew who we were.
Whoa. Back up now. Now, okay. Now, you got these girls working in a club. Well, what made y'all exempt from men who come in the club spending money and drinking liquor? Why didn't try to get fresh with y'all? I mean, what happened?
Because we were Charlie Wise's granddaughters, and you just didn't do that. And he was walking around the club with that gun on his hip, and everybody knew. You just didn't do that. We was Charlie Wise's granddaughters. You didn't want to get shot. You wasn't trying nothing.
So if a man in the club try to talk to you, you go tell Charlie Wise what would happen.
It'll be all, he going to go right over there and throw him out the club, probably bust him upside the head with the gun unless they try to, you know, act like they want to fight back, and he'll shoot him. He ain't kill nobody, but he'll shot a plenty of people in the knees and the legs and stuff like that. He'll shoot stuff. Just to let you know, I will shoot you.
Well, okay. All right. Wait a minute. Then what I'm trying to understand now, because... All right. How many people, in your opinion, do you know about that Charlie Wise shot?
I'm trying to remember. I would say that I know of, because I was still a child back in that time. So, but that I know of, they didn't let, back in that time, people, your parents didn't let kids know all their business and stuff like that most of the time. So from what I know of it, I can remember at least six different times.
Six different times. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever remember Charlie Wise going to jail for shooting somebody?
Nope. And
okay.
I don't even remember him ever being arrested or having to go to court or anything of that nature.
So the popo didn't bum rush a 5'5" man with a .38 known for shooting somebody. They didn't rush in there on that, is what you're saying to me.
They didn't, and I don't know why. Like I said, I was a child back in those days. I don't know why, but he never went to jail or went to no court or nothing like that for nothing about shooting nobody.
Okay. And you say when he come home, he been the corner in Cadillac, and he start blowing the horn before he get there.
That's right. Now, it don't matter what time for the morning that is, because remember, he was running a nightclub, and sometimes it might be around 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And you know we was asleep at that time.
But if y'all was asleep, Then that means that. Well, what happened if y'all was asleep?
If we were asleep, we better hear that horn. And we heard that horn. And we got our behinds up out of our bed and went out there and opened that gate.
So you had to open the gate so that the king could drive in.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all had to close the gate.
That's right. And then go back and get back in the bed.
Okay. All right.
And
well,
that was good day.
And this would go on day after day, week after week.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know of any man that tried Charlie Wise?
Yeah, his son tried him.
Tell me about that one.
My Uncle Paul tried him one time. He was drunk, and he wanted to try Daddy. And Daddy came on to the house because we was at home, and Uncle Paul followed him home, and then came up in our house and was trying to fight my daddy and my granddaddy. And before you know it, he had done took that .38 off and fired off about 3 rounds at his head. He took off down that street and ran all over the curb and knocked somebody's mailbox down and all kind of stuff.
Whoa! Well, wait a minute. Okay. After that was over, because there was a shooting in the neighborhood, right? Is what you're telling me.
Mm-hmm. But didn't no popo come?
Then that means that the popo had to come, right?
They didn't even come.
Did y'all have telephones down there?
Yeah, we had telephone. We had all the ladies in the most modern electronics at that time, but, you know, we couldn't touch them because that wasn't our stuff. We didn't pay for it, and we didn't earn it, so we weren't allowed to touch all that kind of stuff without permission.
So now, I know, and it was just me adding this, because I know Charlie Wise provided all the food and clothing and shelter for all of y'all. Is that correct?
That's correct. He did that.
And wasn't no Ku Klux Klan getting involved in nothing.
Mm-mm. The way he saw it, we didn't have the need or no want. Like kids, they get you do some housework, you get an allowance. I asked my granddad one time for an allowance because all the kids at school were talking about they get allowance. So I asked my dad for the allowance. He said, "More." You paid in full. Every time you get dressed, eat a meal, and got a roof over your head, you paid in full.
Okay.
So we never did do that, get no allowance and stuff like that. And we worked.
All right. Okay, all right, now, you told me you had all these sisters.
Mm-hmm.
How many men did Charlie Wise allow to come to the house to date y'all?
I went on one date, and that was...
Okay, tell me about it.
I went to the senior prom.
Okay.
My one date. And when the guy got there to pick me up, Daddy got him on in the house, set him down, and he was marching around, dude, with that gun on his hip. And talking about what time to have me back, took the guy's ID, driver's license from, wrote down all that information, went outside, wrote his tag down, and everything. And then go out, and there ain't going to be nothing going on. You have her here at 11 o'clock, and at 11:01, I'll be looking for you.
Well, did the young man have you back? According to Charlie Wise's instructions,
he brought me back early. I think I got home about 6:30.
But did the boy try to get fresh or go to bed with you?
No. want none of that going on.
Y'all, ladies and gentlemen, you have to excuse me. Excuse me. Now, wait a minute, sister. You, because I'm laughing because I have experienced some of the same thing, but I've never seen a one-man show like this right here. Now, how did Charlie Wise had a wife?
Yeah.
Your grandmama.
Yeah.
How many times did you hear your grandmama get Charlie Wise straight?
There was a few, maybe I'll say it was a few times where she had to get him straight, but not often. Not
all right. Well, how did the conversation go? What did she say?
You know, Charlie Wise was bad with everybody outside that house, but when he came up in that house, he didn't mess with Genevieve because I don't know what about her, but he would not mess with her. When she raised up for her, so they get in an argument, he's back down usually and gone to get the hell on out of the way.
Do you think that Charlie Wise had to back down up in there because he had to go to sleep and she know where all the guns was?
And she had her own, too. She carried a 9.
A 9mm?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Okay. So, all right. So...
And they wouldn't even know how parents have guns and stuff in the house today to keep them locked away in lock boxes and stuff like that. To keep the kids from my granddad and my grandmama didn't never hide their guns. Their guns was always right near them, somewhere laying on the table or laying on the chair beside them or whatever. They never hid no guns away from us, and we did not touch them. Because they told us what the consequences of touching. If you want to, I'll break every teeth in your mouth out. So, we knew they would.
Well, I think that's a pretty good lock to have on a gun.
I'm telling you, that's the best one. So we didn't even touch it. Even when they would leave the house or something, go somewhere and maybe leave the guns there, we still would not touch them guns. Ever.
Okay. All right. That was a good thing. That was tremendously a good thing. Let me ask you another question now. Back to the club. Did you ever see, while you was in the club, any man inside that club try Charlie Wise in the club?
Yeah, they got in a card game one time, and somebody was playing cards with him and got on the losing end. I don't even know why they continued to play, because he always won, because he can count numbers in his head, and he's counting cards. So he was always on the winning end, but this one guy saw he was cheating or something and accused dad of cheating. And before you know it, he had to pull their gun off and fire off on him about 3 times.
Did he shoot him?
He didn't shoot him. He just shot in the air around.
Well, which way the guy went?
Sure did. The accuser him of cheating.
Did the guy leave the club?
He wasn't known in the park as no cheating man. Everything that he got.
I can't hear you.
That's what they tried to instill in us. Everything he got, he earned. So that's how he got his respect. And he tried to.
All right, well, now, when Charlie Wise fired off them shots at that guy, what did the guy do?
He took off running.
Ran out the club.
Ran out of there.
But he came back the next day, didn't he?
He couldn't come back. He knew he couldn't come back up in there ever again. His days was over coming back in there.
Okay. All right.
All right, well, sister, this is a very extraordinary story, and I'm so glad you told it, because today we have a lot of young men calling themselves men, and I have guns and all this right here stuff here, but the story that you're telling me is this particular character, your grandfather, Charlie Wise, that's a piece of cloth that I've heard about before, but you're telling it to us raw, and this is an amazing story.
He was an amazing person. He lived to be 96 years old.
Well, after he got old like that, you mean to tell me nobody didn't come around try after he got old and weak?
No, I guess after he kind of went, he had several strokes that had kind of made him incapacitated, where he couldn't move on his left side. So after that, you know, they went ahead and sold the club and stuff like that, and things just went on its natural course after that.
Okay.
But he stayed in business for a long time. He had to be like in his 70s, and he was still getting around, still driving, everything, still had his full set of teeth in his mouth until the day he died.
Undefeated man.
Yeah.
Never seen nobody whoop him.
I ain't never seen or heard about it.
No police tried to bum rush him.
Nope.
Ku Klux Klan out the question.
I didn't see none of them. That's the thing, though, with living in Alabama during that time, and he was, you know, he had been coming up through the 50s and stuff like that in Alabama, but and I was raised there, but I never even seen any Ku Klux Klan the whole time I was there. I'm sure they were there, but they weren't. We was in our own community. We lived in the community.
Okay, now wait a minute. Maybe the Ku Klux Klan didn't know he was there. What do you think?
I'm sure they knew, because the good old boys down there probably had done already told them about Charlie Wise and leave that that one right there alone.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, sister, I certainly appreciate you calling in and telling us the story about the mighty Charlie Wise.
All right.
I'm finna go on to the next caller. Thank you so much.
All right.
All right. Area code 716. Could you tell us who you are? 716. Tell us who you are.
Peace. This is Miera from New York. I really enjoyed that story. Hi. How are you tonight?
I'm just fine. What's on your mind, sister?
Well, I hope I can say what's on my mind. If I can keep
sure
laughing
you can.
At the story I just heard. That was a wonderful story the sister gave. But I just wanted to elaborate on what she said about the minority and everything. Mm-hmm. So I won't take up too much time so we can get on with the rest of the show. But, you know, what she was saying about the TV and stuff, about the end of January, I had listened to this program. It comes on Wednesday nights, and it's called the Comedic Ascendance. And it's a library, you know, by a woman that has transitioned, and she left this library, you know, for, you know, the people here. And in one of the topics this particular night was on entertainment. And it was entertainment, what it is, what it ain't. And they broke down what entertainment meant. So I'm just going to just elaborate on it just a little bit, though. But, you know, in agreement with what she was saying, they broke it down as entertainment, meaning capturing and going into the minds of people.
Oh, really?
Yes. And then it just, you know, it went into a lot of other stuff, like, it showed how the Jews ran Hollywood, and it showed how the Jews changed their names. A lot of people changed their names to, like, American names, you know, and it showed the pictures of them. I think I can remember one was, like, Tony Curtis. I can't remember all of them, all of the people. But, you know, it went on the show, and actually the birth of entertainment was in 1828 by Thomas Dartmouth Rice. And they called it, this one segment, they would call it Jumping Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And they were saying that it was created, he created entertainment to keep black people enslaved and to demean them, their image, and white people painted their faces black.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, I just wanted to elaborate on that, you know, and, you know, get agreement to what she said. And there's, you know, a lot more, and maybe, you know, if there's a topic on it one day, maybe I could go more into it. But that's basically, you know, as far as, like, the minority and the majority, they want to keep us, you know, and, you know, keep our mind, you know, enslaved so that we don't know who we are. And,
okay.
You know, that's how they used to mimic us, you know, through television, you know, painting their faces black, you know, to demean us, you know. So
okay.
they would call it small hats attack the image of black people, and they call that the ethnic notions.
Okay.
And then a guy by the name of Reuben Sturman, he was a world-known pornographer. He was the one that started the pornography.
Wait a minute. Reuben
Sturman.
What was the last name?
Sturman, S-T-U-R-M-A-N.
And he's the one who came out with pornography.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he was the world-known pornographer. And it went
all right,
on
well,
show
now,
all
who did he have in the majority of his films?
I have that on another note. I just, when the sister brought it up about the TV and stuff, I just grabbed this, you know, where I was writing notes on that particular segment that was on January 30th. But they had, from what I can remember, you know, it was just talking about how he had started. They didn't, you know, show a lot about the pornography, but it just showed how he would be, you know, eluding, you know, the police and stuff, and, you know, how he, you know, got that on there, and how, you know, basically it was like with the pornography and all the other stuff that they were doing, you know, to attack the image of black people.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, in your opinion today, who do you think is the majority and who do you think is the minority?
I think that we are the majority. We are the majority. But they want us to think that we are the minority so that we don't know who we are.
Who want us to think that?
The European, the Caucasian people.
Okay. All right. What else you got for us?
That's all. I just want to hear what else is going on with the rest of this stuff about these guns and stuff. But I just wanted to elaborate on that a little bit because this is so good. I can listen to that sister talk about. I could go on about my grandfather, but I was just a little girl. I was born in Alabama too. But my parents came.
Now wait a minute.
What
happened down there? Now where you were? Because see, you might have. Cause see, we don't have Charlie Wise now. Come on now, let me have it.
Well, I was just a baby when my parents brought me up, you know, up north. So I don't know. I just know from what I hear about my grandfather was
what
William
did he
Jack
did
Ridgway.
What did you know about him?
I don't know. I didn't hear too many stories about him. I just know more, you know, just like in the family. I guess they was down in the South. They didn't play too much though. They didn't play.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They did not play. So everybody abided by the rules. They didn't, you know, they didn't talk back and nothing like that, like what we got going on today with these children today. I don't know what kind, what's with this, these generations today, what happened. But, you know, just there's no, I don't know, there's no respect or anything like that. You know, you and you have so many young people with guns, you know, and just, you know, no value of life or anything. You know, they just,
okay.
just shoot, you know. Back in the days now, I guess they did have reason to have the guns there because they had to protect themselves from, you know, probably the Ku Klux Klan or whoever else wanted to come up against them. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
in today's time, you know, they just shoot just for anything, any little reason,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Okay. Well, so I guess, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to an audio plug. And we fin to listen to somebody describe about the majority and the minority. And now, because you've already told us who the majority is. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Hold your hat, sister.
Okay. So, before I get a bunch of crap about this title, let me explain. I was just thinking, it's Black History Month right now, right? Like, February? Yeah, okay. So, lately, America's been all, you know, well, not lately, but just America, white has normally been the superior race. Or just the more dominant race. There's been more of us. And lately, actually, white people are decreasing in numbers. And Hispanics and blacks are becoming more numerous. So I just got to thinking, like with all these months, like Black History Month, Asian Pacific Heritage Month, with which I know a lot of you probably have not heard of, Hispanic Heritage Month, even Women's History Month. Like, we want everyone to be treated equally, right? But if we keep celebrating all the minorities, it's just gonna keep separating them, if that makes sense. I mean, because it's not gonna be until that we actually ignore the color of your skin, we stop celebrating any minorities, we stop celebrating the more numerous heritages and stuff. It's just, it's not until then that our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, are going to look at someone and not even notice the color of their skin. They're going to notice their eyes or their smile or something that really matters. The first thing they're going to notice is not going to be, oh, he's black or she's Mexican or she's Irish or whatever, you know? And I just, it's so stupid that people don't see that. So, yes, I hate Black History Month. But I also hate Hispanic Heritage Month and Asian Pacific Heritage Month and Women's History Month. So let's stop celebrating the minorities and just start celebrating people as a whole.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if any of you got any questions out there, go ahead and raise your hand and we're going to open these lines because we're going to get to the bottom of the situation. We're going to deal with this now. Urban situation. We're going to deal with it. Now, here's a young Caucasian woman who says that the minorities need to stop. We need to stop celebrating all these minority history months. And for everybody to just forget about all that and just we all blend in and everybody just, you know, everything needs to just be all right. So I need to hear your comment on that, okay? We go ahead and raise your hand. I welcome you.
What is your real name?
Malcolm. Malcolm X.
Is that your legal name?
As far as I'm concerned, it's my legal name.
Have you been to court to establish the
story? I didn't have to go to court to be called Murphy or Jones or Smith. Excuse me for answering you this way.
That's all right.
If a Chinese person were to say his name was Patrick Murphy, you would look at him like he's insane, because Murphy is an Irish name, a European name, or the name that has a Caucasian or a white background. And a yellow person, Chinese is a yellow man, and he has nothing to do or no connection whatsoever with the name Murphy. And if it doesn't look proper for a person who is yellow or Chinese to be walking around named Murphy or Jones or Johnson or Bunch or Powell, I think it would be just as improper for a black person or the so-called Negro in this country, as we're taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, to walk around with these names. And therefore, he teaches us that during slavery, the same slave master who owned us put his last name on us to denote that we were his property. So that when you see a Negro today who's named Johnson, if you go back in his history, you'll find that he was once his grandfather, or one of his forefathers was owned by a white man who was named Johnson. His name is Bunch. His grandfather was owned by a white man that was named Bunch.
Would you mind telling me what your father's last name was?
My father didn't know his last name. My father got his last name from his grandfather, and his grandfather got it from his grandfather, who got it from the slave master. The real names of our people were destroyed during slavery.
Was there any line, any point in the genealogy of your family when you did have to use the last name? And if so, what was it?
The last name of my forefathers was taken from them when they were brought to America and made slaves. And then the name of the slave master was given, which we refuse. We reject that name today.
You won't even tell me what your father's supposed last name was, or gifted last name was?
I never acknowledge it whatsoever.
Let me ask you about the status of Elijah Muhammad. First of all, is he ill?
I spoke to him today. He is in better health than he has been. He's suffering from asthmatic bronchitis.
Is that why he didn't attend your rally on last Tuesday?
Yeah, the only reason that he didn't attend was his ill condition, and the weather here, especially on that particular day, was of such nature that it would have been almost insane for him to come.
Well, now, did you hold that meeting last Tuesday because it coincided with the general election, the primary election?
I think if you study the history of Mr. Muhammad's work and religious work in this country, we've had our convention on February the 26th every year for, I think, the past 33 years.
Well, now, while you don't care to discuss your former name or the name that the slave master gave to your antecedents, it is a matter of record that Muhammad's last name was Poole, Elijah Poole.
No, that's the name that his slave master gave to his grandfather or great-grandfather, but that's not his name.
Well, his mother and father thought when they called him Elijah Poole that was his name.
They didn't know any better.
Well, if they didn't know any better or not, they thought that was his name.
Yes, sir, but sir...
Well, what I'm trying to find out is when did he cease to be Elijah Poole and get to be Elijah Muhammad?
In 1931, I think it was, in Detroit, he was taught the true history of our people and made aware at that time that he was wearing an English name, and by not being an Englishman, he looked out of place. And his teacher gave him the name that he's wearing today, Muhammad, Elijah Muhammad.
All right, now when did he become what he purports to be in your literature, the son of Allah?
I've never heard the Honorable Elijah Muhammad referred to as the son of Allah.
The prophet of Allah. Okay.
I've never heard him referred to as the prophet of Allah.
What do you refer to him as?
Messenger of Allah.
All right, the messenger of Allah, and I appreciate the correction.
Yes, he says that a prophet is somebody who predicts the future, and he's not predicting the future, whereas a messenger is someone who carries a message that has been given to him by one who authors that message.
Well, now, who gave him the message, and to whom is it supposed to be delivered?
Master W.F. Muhammad. The one who taught him is the author of the message. He gave it to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, which makes him the messenger. And he's to deliver that message of truth and righteousness to the 20 million American so-called Negroes, which means he's to teach us the truth, which will awaken us, and then show us how to live a life of righteousness, which will automatically qualify us for recognition as human beings by all other righteous human beings here on this earth.
Well, now, one other question. With reference to what Mr. Hurlbut asked you a little bit ago, you took a very moderate position of wanting independence without having any hatred for the whites. Do I understand that correctly?
Hatred is not involved in it whatsoever.
Well, I recall in a recent plane crash, two or three years ago, or less than that, a charter flight on Air France in which a group of people from Atlanta, Georgia, were, as they say, in the business, as they took off from Orly Field. And you were quoted at that time as expressing great gratification that this tragedy had occurred. Do you recall that?
I recall it.
What did you say? Do you remember?
The press misinterpreted it and misrepresented it.
What did you say?
They said that it was made at a Muslim meeting. It wasn't. It was made at a rally of Negroes, Baptist, Methodist, Catholic, and otherwise in Los Angeles, who were rallying to protest the brutal shooting of seven unarmed Negroes.
And what did you
by
say?
By heavily armed white policemen in the city of Los Angeles. And because we are a people who have been taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to never carry weapons of any kind, but to get on God's side and rely on God to fight our battles for us, at the time that these brothers were shot down so brutally, I pointed out at the funeral of the brother who died that God would step in and take a hand in giving us some form of justice for the brutal killing of our brother. And when the plane crashed in France, I pointed out to the crowd at this rally that this was an act of God showing his wrath or complete resentment over the brutal form of injustice that had been inflicted upon our poor unarmed brothers.
Were you saying that, or
Billy
do you believe
Graham,
that?
At that time, Dr. Billy Graham was in a crusade in Chicago, and the press, your papers here in this city, quoted Billy Graham as also saying that that plane crash was an act of God. And if you take time to check the newspapers, I think that you'll find that this is correct. But no one thought that Billy Graham was so wrong when he attributed the crash of this plane to his God. But when we say that it come from our God, then we're looked upon as being, you know, outrageous.
I know, but you took the position that this was a matter of satisfaction to you for an injustice done against you. And I think that that's a trifle severe.
We did not think that it was a coincidence that 120 of the whites on this plane came from the state of Georgia, a state that has the worst record in the history of America for the mistreatment of black people in this country.
Worse than Mississippi?
They maybe are a little less Mississippi is a little less hypocritical today than Georgia, but both of them are still practicing the same thing. Now the whites in Georgia bite Negroes with a smile, whereas they used to bite them with a growl. But they're still being bitten, and we don't think that it is any worse to be bitten with a smile than it is to be bitten with a growl.
Mr. Calvert.
While we're on the subject of Mississippi, what is your organization's position of what happened in Mississippi in the past?
Such as
months?
What?
Such as the James Meredith incident and the enrollment of him in the university.
Well, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad wants justice for every one of the 20 million so-called Negroes. And to just take one Negro and stick him in college with the aid of the 15,000 troops and at a cost of $6,000 is a disgrace. It's a waste of taxpayers' money. It's a farce. It's hypocrisy. Because if it's right for one Negro to be forced into that university, then every Negro in the state of Mississippi who is qualified has the same right to go to that university. And if the government is not ready and willing to enforce the right of every Negro in the state of Mississippi, then, in my opinion, sir, it's only hypocrisy to pretend that they are for justice by pushing one Negro in and blowing it up all over the world to make it look like they're solving the problem when millions of black people in that state are still going to segregated schools and getting an inferior education.
Does your organization encourage members to attempt to enter schools that have been known as all white?
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad doesn't discourage us from attending white schools, but he does say that it is better for us to go to our own schools, and after we have a thorough knowledge of ourselves, of our own kind, and racial dignity has been instilled within us, then we can go to anyone's school and we'll still retain our race pride, our racial dignity, and we will be able to avoid the subservient inferiority complex that most Negroes have or are, that is instilled within most Negroes who receive this sort of
love you. Yeah,
You to understand that all of us have a history. All of us have a story. And I want to tell you, because you've been listening to me for a long time, and I know a lot of us have these things in our mind. Well, okay, who is this man? You know, where did he come from? What's his story? So I'm going to take time to do that tonight, and I'm going to tell you who I am. Now, but before I tell you that, I want you to understand something. When a woman have a child, that child is in the care of that woman and his father. He's in the care of his parents. He can't help how he ends up of what he becomes. They determine that by their guidance and nurturing and feeding and teaching and guiding. Now, I came into this life, and sometimes I think back that I just come in on a single thread of life. I was not a premature child. I came in full term. But my grandfather stole my grandmother from my great-great-grandfather when she was 12 years old. Now, my great-grandfather, he was a Moor. His name was Moore. He had 13 sons and 9 daughters. There was no such thing as going to the store to buy anything. Everything that they needed to eat and drink and live and move and have their being was right there on the land. They were self-sustaining. You did not come to my great-great-grandfather's house to talk about dating one of his daughters. You had to holler all the way from the gate up front to talk to somebody. My great-great-grandfather would walk out there to meet you, to listen to what you had to say. But before you even finish what you were trying to say, he would extend his hand to greet you. He wants you to shake his hand. If you put your hand in my great-grandfather's hand and you did not have calluses on your hand, clearly showing that you were man enough to engage in physical work, he will remove his hand from your hand and turn around and go back toward the house. But fortunately for many men, my grandmother would always, great-great-grandmama, she would always watch the encounter. And when he got almost to back up to the house, she would holler out the window and tell the young men to run, who didn't have calluses in their hand, because he regarded them as men of weakness. And he was going to get his gun, and he was going to start shooting. My grandfather had went through this many times, even though his place and his family did things different. He would watch my grandmother and them go to town and my great uncles and them go into town to watch their sisters. But when it come time to leave, the girls would always leave by themselves, and they would come through the woods, and they would have to cross the creek. The girls would cross the creek, and they knew where all the little nuts and bolts and wiggle pins on the logs that was stretched across the creek. And they knew how to run across them logs barefooted and get on the other side. But the men who didn't know, they would try to cross them and follow them girls, and they'd fall in the water, and over and over and over, and you end up with men splashes in the water. The water moccasins and stuff run because there was so much splashes in the water. But my grandfather, he was a Blackfoot. He wouldn't cross the log. He would watch. So what he did was, he didn't cross. He would come late at night and throw pebbles against the window to wake my grandmother up. And one day he stole his boss man's Model T Ford. It was the first year they ever came out. And he told her, I need you to go with me. He said, I want you to go with me. He said, I'll take care of you. And he convinced her to go, and she left. And it came, went through three states, and it came. When my great-grandfather awoke, he was extremely angry. He was angry. He got together an army. But then he told the army, he said, no. He said, y'all stay here. He said, I'm finna go get him by myself. He had one thing in his mind. He said, I'm gonna find him. And when I find him, I'm going to kill him. Because he has stolen my baby. He didn't steal the others. He stole the baby. He come through three states. You have to keep in mind that both of these men, great-great-grandfather and my grandfather, were master trikers, hunters, fishers, and survivors, and cold-blooded killers. He caught them. When he run up on them, he had a double-barrel shotgun. He tried to separate them when he caught them. But they held on to one another. She was pregnant. He tried to use one hand to separate them so he could kill my grandfather. But she held on to him. They fell all down on the ground in the dirt until it stayed there all day long until the sun set. And he realized that he was by himself. He had no way of separating them so he could shoot my grandfather. So he turned around and he walked back up into the woods and went back from whence he came. Later, my mother was born. And after she was born, later, I was born. And when my great-grandfather got on his deathbed, my grandfather finally went back to the place where he stole my grandmother from. And my great-granddaddy told him, he said, you stole my baby. He said, I know. I did. He said, I'm sorry, I know that. He said, you know, if I had a culture, I'd kill you. He said, I know you. I know you would have. He said, you stole my baby. He said, I know I did. He said, you know, if I had a culture, I would have killed you. He said, out of all the men that came to get my daughters, you end up being the best one. He said, thank you. He said, but if I'd have caught you, boy, I'd have killed you. He said, I know you would have. So we have to be thankful that we are here. Sometimes I can't help myself. I have their blood coursing in my veins. When someone does something, with my people, I have to do something to stop it. All of us have a story. But tonight, we're dealing with the more than the urban jungle. Now, fellas, when you get ready to go hunting, you're going to need specialized equipment. You'll need certain type of weapons. All of you are going to need a shotgun. All of you are going to need a handgun. All of you are going to have to master the use of these weapons and exhaust the use of these weapons. All of you are going to have to know how to live in the woods without causing a disturbance so you can move from point A to point B. If it is food that you're after, you're going to need to know how to provide that food. You do not want to be in a jungle at night with a weapon that you have not modified to be silent. That is a no-no. You're going to have weapons that makes very little sound. You're going to have to know how to provide food. The rules are you never kill an animal that you're not going to eat. That is the mark of a savage. You're not a savage. You need a 12-gauge shotgun. You need a handgun, preferably an automatic weapon. You're going to need a 22. You're going to need at least a 44 or 45. Now, when you are coming through these jungles, in these woods, there are wild pigs. Never, ever, ever run up a tree. Because if you do, he's going to wait until you come down. When he comes through the brush and you see him, you're going to have to hit him behind the ear. Do not shoot him in the face. Shoot him behind the ear. You'll drop him. Do you understand what I'm trying to tell you? When you go fishing, carry you a sharp stick so you can stand over the fish and throw the spear and take the fish out. Put a hole in the ground, put you some fire and wood down in there, cook that fish. You do not want blazing fires to be seen for a long place, long ways. There are certain techniques that you have to use to survive. I learned these things a long time ago, and they have served me well. A lot of men go fishing. All that's good. But when what we're talking about now is urban survival, because at the area of a lot of your cities, on the outskirts of these city areas, there are woods that provide all type of resources for your survival. Your skills is what's you're gonna use to survive. You're gonna have to master these skills. If you do not know how to use your weapons, get training. You have to do that. You have to get the training. You must never forget that we are in a war. Our children are being shot down in the street. We're being murdered all across the United States. I'm encouraging you to master these type of skills. You have to learn how to plant, grow your food, process your food, cook your food, and feed your family. If you are currently on any type of government subsidy, do not sell your food stamps or your welfare. Take these instruments and begin to invest in storage of what you're going to need. That gives you time to master the skills of what it would take to survive. You can walk straight out into the woods. Stay there for at least 4 or 5 hours. Come back with food to feed your family. You cannot do that unless you have skills. Now, this broadcast is dedicated to showing you or providing you with the information that you're going to need to do that. Every man needs in his arsenal a shotgun, a handgun, a .22 rifle. He's also going to have to know how to fish and hunt. This is not a joke. This ain't coming on TV for you to learn how to do. If you are in the woods at night, you're going to need night vision equipment. You're going to need the type of equipment that makes darkness appear as light. That is an investment that you need to make. If you say you love your children, if you say you love your wife, you love your mother, your brother, your sister, then you don't worry about what they ain't willing to do. You do what you got to do and prepare to survive. My job is to bring the information to you, break it down to the furthest, lowest denomination I can break it down to you. You're going to have to prepare yourself for the next coming years. You're going to have to realize where you are right now. You're in New York City. You're looking at all the buildings, all the cars, all the hustle and bustle and all that. Go out the back door in New York City and look toward the woods. Master survival there. Then you can come on back, go up in your apartment, or whatever you got to do. But when push comes to shove, no matter what happened, you're able to survive because you have skills. You have the right equipment to use. Very important. I ride across the land and just come out of South Florida. You see different animals and stuff, deer on the side of the road. The deer come out of the woods. You have men in these woods taking down these deer and processing these deer and taking them home and filling up their freezers and feeding their family. You cannot afford to say, well, that's for somebody else. I don't do that. I have a Cadillac. I got a bank account. I'm all right. You're going to have to master survival skills. I'm telling you. Go and get all the natural pure water that you can. And remember, if you're in the woods and you stuck, if you run across a pond with sitting water, that's water that you do not drink. If the water is running across a brook, that's the water you drink. Don't kill every rattlesnake you see. Cut his head off and skin him. Pull the poison out. Chop him up. You can cook him and eat him. And you can survive. There's all kinds of survival techniques. I know this sounds kind of bizarre. If children have fevers and sickness, there are certain leaves and plant that grows on trees. When you master this, you simply go out and you go up and you eat that, bring it down, make it a tea, make the child drink it, and he fine. But you have to learn these things. It's time now for us to learn skills of survival. We have to learn how to do these things. And we have to learn now. Now, if any of you got any questions or comments, now's the time to raise your hand. If you got any questions about the how-tos and what shoulds and all that there, go ahead and raise your hand.
Be sure to subscribe to NBTV at NBTV1.com. The people that cares.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. Why the media and politicians fear African Americans. That is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. As we have been reporting, a vicious crime in Norfolk, Virginia. It's being stonewalled by the media in that town, and the police investigation seems chaotic, to say the least. Last month, two reporters for the Virginian Pilot newspaper were beaten by a mob of African American young people. Their injuries kept them out of work for a week. Yet, incredibly, the newspaper did not report the crime. And the two reporters have now filed formal charges against the Norfolk Police Department, alleging the cops did not do enough to make arrests in the case. Initially, the Norfolk police described the crime as a simple assault, but now it has been upgraded to a mob action. After almost a month, just one minor has been arrested, despite the fact that scores of people witnessed the violence. The national media has also ignored the story, possibly because it has heavily racial implications. So, what's really going on here? Right now, there are 39 million African Americans in the USA, comprising 13% of the population. Unemployment among blacks, 13%, as opposed to 8.1% for the general country. 27% of African Americans live below the poverty line. And 72% of black mothers give birth outside of marriage, which is a huge poverty driver. President Obama's approval rating among blacks, 88%, according to a Gallup poll. However, 48% of African Americans are not satisfied with the direction of the country. 52% are. There is no question the United States of America has not treated blacks well throughout its history. As John Adams once wrote, slavery is an abomination, and the persecution of blacks after the Civil War was almost as bad. Because of that history, we are still having trouble with equality. The media fears controversy involving black Americans, even while some in law enforcement do the opposite. They are very tough on young black males in particular. The truth is African Americans are treated differently by the powerful. On last night's Factor, Bernie Goldberg said the media is ignoring the story of Norfolk because of paternalism, because they don't want the nation to know that a mob of young black people beat up a white woman and her date, fearing it might embolden bigots. That analysis by Bernie is worth thinking about. On the police front, it's hard to figure out just what Norfolk Police Chief Sharon Chamberlain is doing. Her department refuses to release the 911 tape and now has to deal with the formal complaint filed by the victims. Virginia authorities in Richmond are searching for a way to deal with the mess. Tomorrow night, Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli will be here. And Talking Points believes progress towards justice is being made. At least they hope so. Those thugs who attacked Marjan Rastami and David Forrester have to be held responsible, period. Can't have mobs attacking people in the street, no matter what color. And that's the memo. Now for the top story tonight. Reaction, joining us from Chicago, Fox News analyst Santita Jackson. So where am I going wrong here, Ms. Jackson?
Well, I don't think that you're going wrong, and please call me Santita. Certainly, I do pray for the family. But I want us to detect the problem, which you have done a fine job of doing. We need to dissect the problem, which we're beginning to do now, and then correct the problem. Unfortunately, we pay far more attention to interracial violence in this country than intraracial violence, but that having been said, it's very interesting to me, Bill, that the reporters initially did not want this to be a news story. But now that it is, where do we go from here? We've got to dissect this. We've got to find out what is going here. I do not feel that the media in and of itself or other people are afraid of black people. I think that we've had long simmering tensions, as you so brilliantly laid out at the beginning of the show. And we've got to dissect these tensions so that we can correct them.
Okay, but if a story of this magnitude is ignored by the local media in Norfolk, and it's not just the Virginian pilot, the TV stations are ignoring it too. There's got to be a reason they're ignoring it. Because it is a big story. I mean, it's, if a white mob attacked two black people and beat up a black woman, it would be front page everywhere, TV all over the place. But the opposite doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a reason for that. And what is the reason?
Hmm. Well, perhaps not, because you have a case in Baltimore that has been pushed to the side, a case that is 2 years old that's not being dealt with because of its similarities to the Trayvon Martin case. I think we've got to look at these long simmering tensions, Bill, and begin to deal with them. The fact is, I think that we do not pay enough attention to violence in this country. We tend to get more excited about
interracial violence. All right, but you're generalizing
now.
You're not being specific in the Norfolk case. There's got to be a reason why these people in Norfolk, and I include the police department in that, because the police department didn't want any part of this case, Santita. That's
why
the two victims.
Why do you think?
Well, I have you on, and people, they know what I think. But we want to know what you think. But the police department didn't want to solve the case. That's why the two reporters have filed formal charges against the police department. According to them, the police guy said, hey, you know what? Let it go. We don't really want to get involved. So the police department and the media in Norfolk, Virginia, didn't want to touch the case. There's got to be a reason. And, I mean, I think it's a race thing. I think they're afraid. They're afraid to do the story because it opens up a lot of old wounds and a lot of hatreds. That's what I think.
Well, you know, the fact is, I think you might be onto something there, but the wounds have not healed.
No, they haven't healed.
And that's why I talked about. No, they haven't healed, but they won't. But they still will not heal if we do not have a conversation. We have become verbally violent.
With all due respect, it's got to be more than a conversation. Is justice involved here? Two people were beaten.
No, but Bill, But, Bill, we've never had a conversation. Let me tell you something. In 1993, when you had the Garden City shootings, Oh, that having been said, when we went to when you had the Garden City shootings in Long Island in 1993, Reverend Jackson went out to Garden City to a special service on a Sunday. He preached, I sang, and it was an attempt at healing. But the thing is, Bill, what we do is we get very excited when we have these particular events, but then the conversation ceases. We have not had a real conversation about race, we've been doing this
for 16 years. Why isn't your father in Norfolk, Virginia? If he were to go
First of all, we wouldn't have known about it.
We've been reporting now almost a week on. If your father and Al Sharpton and other black leaders would go to Norfolk, Virginia and stand there in that neighborhood and say, you know what? This isn't going to stand with us. We were in Trayvon Martin. Now we're here. Mm-hmm. It's an opposite situation, but we want justice for all. Do you know how much that would go to heal if they would do that? But we don't see them there, Santita. They're not there.
But, you know, Bill, I can't believe you're actually saying that Reverend Jackson can have a healing role
in America. He could be a conciliator here.
That having been said, the reason I would, well, let me say this. I cannot say that there's complete equivalency between this case and the Trayvon Martin case.
I'm not trying to make the equivalency. They're both injustices. But Bill, you and I are in agreement.
Bill, you and I are in agreement here, and that's why I brought up the 93 case, because in that instance, when traditionally black leadership, whenever they see an injustice, whether it's intraracial or interracial, they have jumped in, or
well,
when they have been invited in.
They're not jumping
in
here, Santita.
Well,
nobody down here but
well,
my
you know,
guy,
but
Jesse
Bill,
Waters. Nobody.
But, Bill, no one has known about it.
Well, I know.
No one has known about it until now.
This is almost a week here. Everybody knows about the story now. Believe me, it took more than six weeks
for us to find out about Trayvon Martin. These things take time.
All right. I think that this is a race thing. I do think that, and you're right, that we got to start to heal some of these wounds, but they're not going to be healed by cover-ups. Cover-ups are not going
to heal. But, you know, I think it's also, well, if I may say, I think it's a violence thing as well. And I think that we have got to deal with the fact that we are, as a culture, too violent.
All right.
And
I don't disagree with that at all. Now, tomorrow, as I said, the Attorney General of Virginia will be here. We're going to get justice back on track here. Ms. Jackson, always a pleasure. Thank you. Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. A racial attack in Virginia and possible obstruction of justice. That is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. Last night we reported that two journalists working for the Virginian Pilot newspaper were assaulted in Norfolk by a group of black men. Crime took place on April 14th, shortly after 11 p.m. 26-year-old Marjan Rastami and 31-year-old David Forster were riding in a Chevy Cavalier when they stopped at a light. Apparently, someone threw a rock at their car, whereupon Ms. Forster got out of the car to confront the assailant. He was set upon and beaten. Ms. Rastami called 911, and then she was beaten by the men. The factor has obtained the police report of the incident, where a hate crime box is checked off. But police now say that was a clerical error. We asked the police for the 911 tape. Late today, they told us they would decide tomorrow whether to release it to us. We certainly hope they do. The folks have a right to know what happened. Today, Norfolk police arrested a 16-year-old in the case, but we don't know much about him. We do know that the couple had to get medical attention and missed a full week of work at the newspaper. But incredibly, the Virginian Pilot didn't cover the story until 2 weeks later. Editor Dennis Finney saying the paper thought it was a simple assault and they don't cover that kind of crime. The factor does not believe Mr. Finley. He had to know that two of his employees were attacked by a mob. We believe Finley avoided covering the story because of its racial component. The paper simply tried to cover it up. Now consider what would have happened if the mob of white men descended on a car and beat up a black man and a black woman. I don't have to say anymore. You know what would happen. So why is this case any different? Why isn't it getting national coverage? Why isn't the Justice Department on the scene with a federal presence? Those questions remain unanswered tonight. In America, we're supposed to have equal justice for all. And there are many laws that protect minorities, as there should be. But a bias crime is a bias crime, no matter what skin color is involved. These two reporters are just sitting at a light on the way back from the theater when all hell broke loose.
The first punch was like square right in the nose, just absorbing the blows and being like, okay, I'm all right, I can get back inside. But yeah, there was definitely a moment where, you know, when I'm surrounded and getting punched, that I'm thinking this is getting really bad.
In the neighborhood where the attack took place, some folks weren't surprised.
You by yourself, or if you're not from around here, or you don't know anybody around here, you're a target.
automatically.
And then with all that Trayvon Martin stuff going on, a lot of dumb stuff is happening. People are reacting on different races for dumb stuff, you know. So, you know, it could be related to that, or it could be people just want to act stupid.
So let's recap. Looks like a cover-up by the Virginian Pilot newspaper. Looks like the Norfolk police are confused. Was it a hate crime or not? The Justice Department has so far ignored our request for comments, but Attorney General Holder has a responsibility to look into the situation, and we will hold Holder to that. This is a major story. We cannot have Americans of any color being set upon by violent mobs. That cannot stand in this country. The factor will continue to demand justice in Virginia. And that's a memo. Now for the top story tonight, reaction. With us here in the studio, Tavis Smiley, co-author of the best-selling book, The Rich and the Rest of Us, A Poverty Manifesto. So what do you think about this?
I think it's a tragic moment. I think that you're right about the fact that we don't want any of our fellow citizens, never mind race, color, or creed, to be subject to this kind of random violence. I think having said that, though, as I listened to the story, I didn't know it as well as you do, obviously, but listening to the piece now, there are a number of similarities to what happened to the Trayvon Martin case. One, you have the issue of race, obviously. Number two, you have a police department that bungled the investigation. Number three, in Trayvon Martin's case, the media, the mainstream media, took a long time to get on that story. Were it not for the black media, they would never have covered it. And now you raise questions about the cover-up in this story. These cases aren't as dissimilar, perhaps, except for the fact there's a child involved. And it says something about our nation when we have children put upon the way Trayvon Martin was, number one. And number two, Trayvon Martin is dead. I have great empathy and sympathy for their situation. I would not want to be there again. It's unacceptable. We don't want fellow citizens being treated that way. But Trayvon Martin is dead, Bill.
Is there a difference between a white mob setting upon minorities? It doesn't have to be African American. It could be Hispanics. Mm-hmm. Could be American Indians. Anything. And a minority, again, could be any minority, setting upon white people. Or is it the same?
I think it's unacceptable.
No, but is it the same, or is there a different circumstance involved?
Well, first of all, it'd be a case-by-case situation, number one. But across the board, I don't see the difference.
Okay, so I don't see the difference either, because if two black citizens in Norfolk, Virginia, mm-hmm. stopped at a light on the way back from a play.
That's right.
And 30 white guys surrounded and dragged them out. Mm-hmm. You know the Virginia Pilot's going to cover it, or are they not?
I can't speak for the paper.
And no,
I can't
but you know they were.
Well, I don't know that.
You don't think they would cover that story?
I don't know that. I don't know that they would. And here's my point. Trayvon Martin's case took weeks. It took weeks for the story to get covered by the mainstream media, although inside of black America it was being discussed every day.
I don't know
that's
the timeline.
My point.
Okay, all right.
No, then it took 46 days to get a charge leveled against Mr. Zimmerman. So the mainstream media, including Fox News and my friend Bill O'Reilly, didn't jump on that story as fast as
I'm going to have to get on the timeline because I don't have it off the top of my head.
I'm telling you,
when
what
we first heard about Trayvon Martin, we got on it. So I don't know what the timeline was. But here we have a police department that you saw checked a bias crime, and they mm-hmm. said, no, it's not. That's a little. They have a 911 tape they could have given us today. They didn't give it to us.
Sure.
All right, you got to give it up, guys. Come on. We're not accusing the police department of anything here. I'm not. I don't know what happened, okay? You got to give up the 911 tape. All right, and we have a newspaper that is saying, well, we don't cover assaults. Come on. You got two people.
I'm just saying, acknowledge to me on national television, number one, that the mainstream media did take a while.
I can't acknowledge that because I don't know the timeline.
When I first saw
it,
this is the no spin zone.
I heard about it, I got on it.
This is the no spin zone.
That's right.
You know,
as soon as I got on it, I heard about it, I got on it.
I'm talking about the national media across the board. It took them a while to cover the story, number one.
Maybe that's true.
And number two, back to children like Trayvon Martin, where our babies are concerned. It's the white babies in this country who end up on the milk cartons. It's the white babies that these networks want to profile all the time. The blonde, the blue hair, the blonde and the blue eyes. And I'm not opposed to, I think all
well,
life
white
is precious.
Crime is covered. You have a point.
Come
white
on.
Crime, and especially
black,
local
black
news,
babies, brown babies, don't get,
covered,
they don't get the respect.
Black crime isn't covered
that's
as much.
My
and
point.
That might be one of the Virginian Pilot thing. All right, now you have written a very interesting book about poverty, all right? This crime happened in front of a housing project mm-hmm. where poor people live.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So are poor people angry? Do they feel entitled to lash out? Do you think see that happening? And I'm not talking color here.
Mm-hmm.
Poor people in general in America, are they angry? Do they feel entitled to lash out in a violent way?
I don't think anybody's entitled to lash out in a violent way.
But do they feel that way?
I can't speak for all of black America, and I can't speak for all of brown America or all of white America.
In your research?
My research suggests to me that there has always been a link between poverty and crime. And that's why Dr. West and I have written this book, because our very democracy is threatened by poverty. We argue in this book that poverty is a matter of national security. We argue in the book that poverty isn't color-coded. When one out of two Americans is either in or near poverty, that's a societal crisis, Bill. We're getting dangerously close to cementing a permanent American catastrophe. And when people feel put upon because they don't have opportunities to express their dignity by doing work, that's not a black or brown thing. That's an American problem.
What in your book is the primary reason for the poverty?
A lack of opportunity.
Which comes out of where?
A lack of opportunity and corporate greed and political indifference and politicians on the left and the right not making poverty a priority, a bipartisan consensus that poverty doesn't matter. A lot of reasons.
All right. I want to have you back with Brother West, right? Brother West?
He would be here tonight but for that trial for the stop and frisk policy here in New York.
Right.
He's on trial for that.
All right. We'll talk more about poverty. We appreciate you coming in, Travis.
I'm glad to be on, Bill.
Okay, good
Thank
to see you.
Appreciate you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are now officially black. Well, I know we are that. But I'm back. And if it's anybody that would love to voice their opinion, now's the time to raise your hand. You have heard what he said about the minorities, the situation with Trayvon Martin had to be dealt with from a popular media perception in order to get down based on the current situation in the media and all it is. But it's something that's sticking with me. And I don't know how to explain it. I know that when there were, and this was just a few years ago, Caucasian mobs come in, just take a man out, take him, hang him, castrate him, rape her, murder her in cold blood, and then stand in front of the bodies and take pictures of them. There was never any of this, we need to deal with the broadcast, we need to get everybody on to deal with the circumstances, we need to, the politician aspect need to come in, we need to determine about what Al Sharpton got to say, Jesse Jackson, different rulings from different factions, the left wing, the right wing, conservatism, politics, politicians, and all of these things had to be considered before we deal with what's current. Without saying anything to anybody about the current situation that's going on. And been going on over and over and over and over again. My child has been shot down in the street. We're doing an investigation. The media has to be involved. This is a, we need to get this incident isolated. We need to get in various factions to hold talk shows about it. We need to discuss it. It need to be, we got to get it on the Travis Smiley Show. 60 Minutes might need to come in. We need to build a stage because Jesse Jackson is coming down to talk about it and all of that. And this has been going on over and over and over and over again. So, if it's any of you that got any questions, go ahead and raise your hand. But in the meantime, let me tell you about certain situations that you may not be aware of that just happened yesterday. Marvin had a son. Marvin was very, very unique. A cop in a certain city, and I ain't gonna call no names, shot Marvin's son in the back. Blew his lung to pieces. Kill him. He didn't do nothing. He was 13 years old. They mistaken Marvin's son for somebody else and kill him. The police come to Marvin and told Marvin that, sir, we're going to do an investigation on the situation. Well, Marvin told him, said, you can save the investigation because you ain't going to have time. I'm going to do my own investigation. Tell the sheriff department that they're going on lunch, and we got this here. Tell the everybody downtown, don't call my house no more. Don't come out of my house and ask no more questions. They'll get in my way. Marvin had 8 brothers. Marvin brothers came to the house. Marvin went down to the sheriff department 8 times. When he went there, he had one question. I came to find out what the name of the man that it was that shot my child. The sheriff department told him that we're gonna get this to you. He said, how long do I need to wait? Do you need me to sit right here until you tell me? He said, I swear to God, I'm not gonna even raise my voice. When you tell me, I'm going to turn around and walk away. It took Marvin 3 days and his 8 brothers for them to tell him. When they finally told him, he walked away. The man that shot his child in the back is dead. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going on to the next part of the broadcast. Okay? Y'all hold tight.
Okay. Just what is Tahawka's Archive? Tahawka Archives is a collection of some of the most beneficial information in the country. And the way we do this is we put this in your possession and we walk you through getting the job done. Whatever it is that you're dealing with. If you're dealing with your kids in education, if you're dealing with mortgage companies, if you're dealing with bankers, if you're dealing with your light and water company, credit card companies, regardless of what it is, that is the way this thing is designed, because everybody in this country, especially people of African descent, need a power base inside your home. So to access Tahawka's Archive, you simply go to www.tahawkaarchives.org and contact me after you get through with that. Area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and we get you in there. That's TahawkaArchives.org. Okay? That's what it's all about.
Excuse me if you see all this sweat. It's hot in my room. But, I had to make this video. Lord knows. I was going to make this video yesterday, But I received an email that just made me just, it was fuel for this video. Okay, in my other video, yeah, I said why I'm not a fan of Beyonce, right? So I get this email from this girl, and I'm going to post her name on here, so you can go to her webpage if you want. And before I say what happened, isn't it just amusing how these racists that are online, they claim they hate black people. They go to black music videos on YouTube. They go on online forums with black people just to say you're a nigger and this and that and harass you. I'm sorry. I just think it's funny because it's clear you have an obsession. If you don't like somebody or a group of people, why do you continuously go to their websites and obsess over them? That doesn't make any sense. I think it's funny. And I've heard the N-word so much online that I really don't care. I don't really care that you called me that. I don't care. I'm not a nigger. And it's whatever. Seeing it so much, it doesn't faze you, for real. And okay, so let me tell you what happened. I get an email from a person, Clear White Crystal is her name. She says, "Stupid bitch, nobody likes your nappy head, nigger, fuck you. You is jealous of her and ugly and your mama." So, if you're white, you're speaking in Ebonics. You're calling me a nappy-headed nigger. Yet you're defending Beyonce, a black woman who has nappy hair, who perms it. Isn't that hilarious? You're calling me nappy headed. You have Alicia Keys as your main picture, who's half black. Here's an old picture of Alicia Keys. Is that nappy hair I see? Let's look back. It is nappy hair. Oh my God. Girl, I just think you're hilarious, just to let you know who you are. I don't really care what you said. Also, you don't like a nigger, yet on your favorites is Queen Latifah in old R&B music videos. I've noticed this sad trend. Someone says the N-word. Yes, sometimes I click on their names to look at their page, and under their favorites is all these black music artists and all this other black shit. Yet you hate black people. You're funny. You're really sad. There are so many of you online, it's ridiculous. If you fucking hate black people, why the fuck you always on black people websites then? Clearly you're fucking obsessed. There's something about us you fucking love. This is for the ones that are racist. I know all the fucking websites of other ethnic groups. Rape Desi, Brown Pride. I go on there sometimes to, the one that all the KKK go to. I know that one. Stormfront. You know, I don't go on there harassing them or bothering them. You must really love black people. For real, you must really fucking love black people. Because if you didn't care for us so much, why are you so fucking obsessed? It's sickening. You have a mental problem. I'm going to pray for you. For real, because something is wrong with you. You claim you have it all just because you're white. You're better, right? So if you really felt like this, why do you feel the need to always put someone down? You don't really feel like that. You know you're lying to yourself. You are fucked up. But yeah, that's all I have to say on this video about it. You're racist, yet you're always on black people websites and listening to black music. You're pathetic.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's real rough for me to have to bring that. We come to the end of the broadcast. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. And until next time, you all have a good evening. I hope we've got something accomplished here this evening, dealing with all of this stuff. And I thank you for your participation and all of that good stuff. Y'all have a nice night, okay?
Come on.